This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. What's your guilty pleasure? Is it the bag of Oreos squirreled away at the back of the kitchen cabinet, the pint of Ben & Jerry's at the bottom of the freezer, or the snack pack of Doritos in your briefcase? Well, the causes of obesity are many. Genetic predisposition, a sedentary lifestyle, huge portions. Americans seem to be reaching more and more for those sweet, salty, and all too fattening snacks. And the results are showing up on our waistlines. Obesity has reached crisis proportions. Americans are fat. And as the food industry comes under fire for its role in the obesity epidemic, many fast food restaurants are attempting to encourage healthier lifestyles. McDonald's has introduced several new salads. Subway promotes 7 sandwiches with less than 3 grams of fat. Food manufacturers are joining in. Last week, Kraft announced plans to reformulate several popular items, reducing portion size and discontinuing their marketing campaign toward kids in schools. But who's really responsible for the obesity epidemic, the food industry or the consumer? Do Americans truly want healthier fast food? Will they eat it? And more importantly, will they buy it? Will the food industry's effort to improve the way we eat matter to our health and waistlines? Or is it simply a way to ward off troublesome lawsuits? What are your eating habits, and who do you blame for obesity in America? Call us. Our number is 800-989-8255. The email is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from the studios of member station WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is economist and professor of nutrition in the School of Public Health at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, Barry Popkin. Welcome to Talk of the Nation, Professor.
Thank you.
Well, how did we get so fat, Professor Popkin?
Well, obesity is really, getting fat is really the difference between how much you eat and how much you expend in activity. And in the last decade to 15 years, we've increased our average intake by 200 calories for the average American. And an extra 10 calories per day would add up to a pound of weight a year. So if you think about an extra 200 calories a day of extra dietary intake, that's an awful lot of weight gain for the average American 2 and older. So what's happened? One is the point you raised. People are consuming larger portions today. And in the last couple decades, we're also eating more meals, mainly from snacks. The average child eats an extra half a snack a day. We're eating more often, and we're eating larger portion sizes. That's the basic element.
To what extent is the food industry and the restaurant business, to what extent are they responsible for this?
Okay, this is interesting. The first point is, why did the industry even want to do anything? In the last decade, there's been a looming discussion about this major epidemic of obesity, particularly about diabetes now starting to reach children and adolescents. And it's really scared pediatricians, and it started to reach the public. And we're starting to get legislative pushes in many, many states. We're seeing school districts eliminating vending machines. We're seeing more and more legislation being introduced weekly at the state level talking about what's being eaten. So those are two issues. Then we recently had the legal threats and they're emerging just like they did decades ago in the tobacco area. And it took many decades before those legal suits in tobacco became important. So all three of those things matter. And lastly, the Food and Drug Administration at the same time just recently issued a new regulation requiring the labeling of trans fatty acid, another element of diet and an important element of fat that we find in baked goods and many other fried foods in America.
What's so dangerous about trans fatty acids in particular? Let's define that and explain why they are particularly unhealthy.
Well, trans fatty acids, essentially when they take an edible oil that comes from vegetable of some sort, and they add some molecule from hydrogen, and it makes it solid. It makes it really good for cooking and frying. It's the cheapest, best way to fry or bake goods using fats. And alternatives other than that are very expensive, particularly for baking. So, and this trans fatty acid molecule has very important effects on us in terms of cardiovascular disease and cancers. It's been shown to be much more dangerous than, for example, with saturated fat. So that recently the National Academy of Science and Institute of Medicine essentially said we should eat very little of it, if any.
And so is it going to be very difficult for the food industry to stop using, or if that's where it's going? I mean, if they have to put it on their label and if they're using a lot of it and people are turned off by that, are they going to have to change, and how hard will that be?
It won't be hard for those frying foods. It will be quite feasible. There will be a number of oils that they could use. When it comes to baking goods, they'll have to work a little harder, but they've been thinking about this for a decade or two. This is an issue that should have actually been an item that should have been regulated long ago, and it's taken at least a decade longer than the evidence was there before the government was willing to take this on and to push and to ultimately regulate it.
Now, let's talk about a little bit more about labels. Another thing that you see on labels a lot is added sugar. What does that mean in when you see that on a label?
Well, you don't see added sugar on a label. You see sugar in a food item. Much of the sugar that Americans eat is not sugar that's part of a food. Let's say, for example, if you consume a fruit, there's natural sugar in it. But what we've done in this country is, on the average, we eat, for the average American, over 300 calories a day of added sugar. And we've gone up a great deal in the last decade in terms of the amount of added sugar. Added sugars in French fries, added sugars in cereals, added sugars in all sorts of baked goods. It's also in many, many other products. If you looked, you would be surprised. But we don't label it. We don't say how much sugar is added. We only label sugar. And that's really misleading, because what's important is the natural sugars are one thing, but these added sugars, particularly in beverages, are felt to be fairly important and fairly unhealthy.
So those should be on the label. That should be on the label as well, you're saying.
Well, there are many, many scientists and advocates that feel they are, but it will be very difficult for the food industry to agree to that. And a couple of years ago, when there were petitions before both the U.S. Department of Agriculture to put this in our dietary guidelines and for the FDA to regulate this, there was such an outpouring of legal threats and petitions and data coming from the food industry and big political pushes that it was really impossible for the FDA to think about labeling this. And the Department of Agriculture did start discussing this more in the U.S. dietary guidelines. And no one really feels this is a healthful element. In fact, the World Health Organization, with an international group, agreed with what most countries have listed as we should eat no more than 10% of our calories from added sugar.
We're talking about food and the food industry, and if you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. Professor Popkin, I'd like to read an email that we just got from William in Little Rock, Arkansas. He says, I think no matter how we look at it, the responsibility rests with the consumer. We buy the food. We know it's bad. It's our choice. Remember, we're the ones who are paying for it with our money, though also we are now paying for it with our bodies. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. We've created this environment in America where every time you turn on TV, every time you turn on the radio, wherever you look, be it in your workplace, in school, walking down the street, there are vending machines, there are ads, there are fast food restaurants, there are quick food restaurants. We're pushing food. To increase our diets 200 calories a day in the U.S. and to find the same thing happening throughout the world, we're seeing this epidemic obesity everywhere, indicates that there's some vast change in the kinds of behaviors and the kinds of food products that are making it difficult for people in this world to control how much they eat, particularly with the fatty sweet foods, which are the most tasteful foods we could have.
But there is some personal responsibility in this, isn't there?
Oh, there's certainly some personal responsibility, and you certainly find people that are not overweight. But when you find that two-thirds of adult men and two-thirds of adult women in the U.S. are overweight, you have to begin to think this is not a personal responsibility. Everybody in America is not lazy. Everybody is not slothful. And when you find countries as poor as Egypt with the same level of obesity is in the U.S., you begin to realize that it's the environment. It's the environment of selling and promoting food and what we, and how cheap it is that's really having a lot to do with what's being eaten today.
Okay, let's take a call from Paula in Paxton, Massachusetts. Hi, Paula.
Hi.
Go on ahead.
And thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling to ask if anybody would know of any way that we can get the major fast food chains like McDonald's and Burger King to listen to us. I mean, when are they going to start serving veggie burgers or things of that nature or tofu hot dogs? My children love these things, but when I go to McDonald's, and I have to say I'm very glad that they've started with salads now. That works for me, but for the kids in the car, I need something that travels better. When my husband and I went to England in 97, they already had all over at the McDonald's and Burger King, they had veggie burgers, although the McDonald's one was deep fried, which wasn't very good. But other than that, is there some sort of campaign that we can start to get them to modify what they are offering?
I have to say, Paula, we're going to have a marketer on later in the show, and he may be able to address that question. I don't know, Professor Popkin, if that's a question you feel you'd like to take as well?
Very briefly, the McDonald's of the world are starting to listen. They're afraid of the legal suits. They're afraid of the push at regulation from the federal level, and they're starting to think about what they can do. McDonald's is theoretically going to create a commission that's going to have people on it who are going to be independent and be able to tell them what they think they ought to do to make for a more healthful diet. The problem is we need to eat less calories, and the food industry wants to sell us calories. We need to find a way to get the McDonald's to sell us fewer calories for what we eat. It's not just a matter whether it's tofu versus beef. We need less tofu and less beef.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Paula.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Professor, how far do you think the food industry will go in cleaning up their act? Or are they just going to go as far as they need to go to perhaps forestall possible lawsuits and more regulation from the government? Or is this really sincere on their part that they're going to try and provide smaller portions, healthier foods for people?
I think they're going to go as far as the consumers will allow them to go on the one hand, but they're not going to try to sell less food. And it's going to take a huge consumer push and obviously at some point possibly federal or state level action of a major sort before we get them to start thinking of ways to cut the kids' advertisements, to change what's in the schools to the point where it's truly healthful and kids will have less calories, and to do the same throughout our days. They make their money from selling us food. They don't make their money if we consume few calories.
Do you know, in the efforts that are being made so far, to what extent they've been successful? Let's talk now about the fast food restaurants. If they have made any gestures on this part, is it working out for them economically?
We've just started to see this. Really, it's all happened in the last year. And the salad bars have led, for example, Wendy's to a major growth spurt, and the other fast food companies are following them. And clearly there's a demand for this. And there's a second kind of food market which has exploded and is really the most rapid growing part of the food market. It's what we call kind of the quick food. It's like where you go into a restaurant and they have a cafeteria, you get the food quickly, and you sit down. Well, there's a whole range of kind of soup and salad and sandwich, healthful kind of food choice places, which are growing faster. And in response, some of the fast food companies are trying to buy up these chains and move into these areas. So we are seeing not only effects on the fast food industry, but we're seeing other effects. But it's going to require consumers to want to eat less. And it's all coming from kind of consumers at this point. The market hasn't tried to push this growth except to catch up. And so it remains to be seen whether we're going to see a large enough segment in the population eating less that we're going to see weight change slow down or stop.
Okay. We're talking about how Americans eat. My guest is Barry Popkin. The food industry has proposed changes to help control obesity. Will it work? We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the food industry's efforts to help curb obesity. Professor Barry Popkin is with us from WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from his office in Washington, D.C., is Gene Grabowski. He is the Vice President of Communications and Marketing at the Grocery Manufacturers of America. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Grabowski.
Thank you, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be with you, and you too, Professor.
Tell us, first of all, who does the Grocery Manufacturers of America represent?
We represent all the brand name food companies, the names that you would recognize on a grocery store shelf, and also the ones that provide food to the restaurants across the country.
Now, as we just heard the professor say, a lot of what is at issue here is the portion size of that is sold in stores now. Is that really going to change? Because doesn't that mean you're going to be selling less food? Isn't that the heart of the matter here?
Well, not really. I mean, you can we sell all different kinds of. If you go to a supermarket, especially the bigger the store, the more variety you're going to find. The king size packages, the smaller portions. So, I think that the key actually is what the professor said at the outset, and that is it's balance. We are in some cases consuming a few more calories than we used to, although in some teenage groups, not a whole lot more than we did in the 60s. But we've got a sedentary lifestyle. We've got a whole host of factors that go into obesity. And one of those factors is definitely nutrition.
Right. So what is happening right now in the industry to try and address this problem?
Well, it's interesting. It's really, and I think the professor said this as well, I can remember being in a meeting 3.5 years ago where we were looking at the obesity trend lines, and we were very concerned as an industry. A number of companies were starting to put plans in place that we're starting to see come to fruition now in terms of reformulating product, in terms of marketing, changes in the way we market the products. And also, consumers in the last couple of years on their own have gotten the message, because the fastest growing segment of our business are the so-called better-for-you foods, lower in calorie, lower in sugar, lower in fat. So consumers on their own, a large segment of them are seeking it out. But as the professor said, I think the industry is acting responsibly and wants to do its part to make sure that people eat better and have a healthier, more active lifestyle.
The professor also was saying, Professor Popkin was also saying, that this is going to be consumer-driven to some extent. To what degree is the industry feeling pressure from the, you just mentioned there is some interest, but how big is the pressure coming from consumers on the industry on this issue?
Rather than view it as a pressure from consumers, it's actually more of a pull. Consumers are asking for, and in some cases demanding, lower calorie foods, lower fats, lower sugars. I'll give you an example. I went jogging the other day at a local high school in the Washington, D.C. area, and there were two soda machines next to the high school, and I went over just to see what the offerings were. One of the soda machines had a complete offering of water and Powerade, which is an energy drink, and the other had one out of five offerings, had one offering of regular soda, and the rest were diet offerings. So we're seeing everywhere in the schools, on the supermarket shelves, and in restaurants, people are asking for lower calorie, so-called better for you foods, and the industry is responding. I mean, that's what we do in the marketplace.
All right, let's take a call, Leslie in St. Paul. Hi, Leslie, or it's Lindsay. Lindsay?
That's fine. Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'd kind of on the same lines of what you were just talking about. When you look at the economic status of people in America, most of us can't afford to strictly buy whole foods or organic foods from co-op type grocery stores. It's just way too expensive. So, and then when you think about how farms are using chemicals and things like that, and if you choose to buy, like, say I wanted to buy lettuce that was from an organic farm someplace in California, it's almost twice the cost of lettuce that's produced on someplace that uses many chemicals and things like that. So what can we do with our government or just as people in general to say that, hey, we need more of these kinds of whole foods? What do you think?
Well, first of all, Lindsay, do you find those in your grocery store at all? You're saying the regular grocery store that you go to, you can't find these kinds of foods at all?
Well, they are there, but they're very limited,
uh-huh.
And they're quite a bit more expensive. So for me, with my family of four, it's just so.
So you have to go out of your way to try and find these kinds of products, you're saying?
Exactly.
Gene Grabowski?
Yes, that's a good observation. I mean, clearly, sometimes you have to look for products like that, and sometimes they're going to cost a little more. That has to do with the marketplace. I mean, the professor actually made a very good point. We have done an excellent job as an industry, as a society, as a culture, in making food affordable, safe, and abundant. We've lowered the cost of food. We've made it available everywhere. And one of the ways we've been able to do that is with mass production methods and ways of producing foods to feed, frankly, billions of people around the world. And when you get into a system of developing food like that, then in order to provide what has become a smaller market for organic foods or for foods that are raised a certain way, you're going to have to pay a little bit of a premium for that. But they are becoming more available because that market is growing. I mentioned that the Better For You foods is growing at about 12% a year, but organic foods are growing at a rate of 12 to 14% a year. And what you're going to see is more and more people eat that way. The market will grow, the cost will come down inevitably. So I've heard at least two callers talk about what can we do. What you do is you go to the supermarket, you ask for the kind of products you want, you ask the supermarket manager, contact the hotlines at food companies, and make requests. The marketplace is responsive to consumers.
All right. Thanks for your call, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And just before you go, Mr. Grabowski, I just wonder, what effect is this threat of lawsuits having on the industry, and to what extent are the efforts that the food industry is making in the direction of
better for you foods, yeah.
Better for you foods, healthier foods, to what extent is that a preemptive strike against future lawsuits?
Well, as I said, I can remember 3.5 years ago seeing being in industry meetings and seeing these trends, and industry leaders have been concerned. I mean, we were acting on this issue long before the lawsuits occurred, and we'll continue to do it after the lawsuits are forgotten. They do sound an alarm bell for certain people, but they're more of a distraction than a solution. I go back to the point that it's calories in and calories out. It's combined. You just can't watch one thing, nutrition or just exercise. You have to think about it in terms of a lifestyle and in terms of making sure you have balance between fitness and nutrition.
All right, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Lynn, could I make a comment on Mr. Grabowski's points?
Absolutely. I just wanted to let the listeners know that Gene Grabowski is the Vice President of Communications and Marketing at the Grocery Manufacturers of America, and he spoke with us from his office in Washington, D.C. And yes, Barry Popkin, I was going to ask you to respond to some of his remarks.
Okay, just a couple of comments. The industry has essentially added value added to the food that we consume, and most of what they're doing is processing what is a trivial cost in the total food. The food element is really tiny, but for them, the processing is what's gained them their profit, except in fruits and vegetables, which is a very high profit segment of the grocery store. But we really haven't seen them come forward in any meaningful way, except when consumers have demanded so far. And when it comes to the kinds of things that advocates are most concerned with, for example, the hundreds of ads on children's TV on Saturday morning or any other children's TV program, we haven't seen them limit the food ads as the industry, as advocates have asked for decades. We've seen them fight it. We haven't seen them come along with many other pushes for health or promotion that would affect the whole industry.
You know,
so
I'm curious.
We have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing I'm curious about. When you're saying that this, on a certain level, you're saying that any changes that are going to come in the food industry are going to have to be consumer driven. Is that correct? Or are going to come from
Certainly.
The consumer? Because. And here's what I'm curious about. You're also saying that it's not a question of personal responsibility. That, I mean, it seems like for the consumers to be really pushing the industry about that, they're going to have to take the personal responsibility to both push the industry and take their own weight into hand. I mean, isn't the consumer the individual?
Yes, but it's not going to be all consumers. Children in schools are not going to be out there demanding that they get rid of vending machines selling Coke and Pepsi that are promoting those products in the school districts so the schools can make some profit and Coke and Pepsi can kind of get their labeling and identity created with these kids. That's going to have to come from parents. The entire atmosphere in America and around the world that just sells us food everywhere is going to have to change, and it's not going to be driven by all consumers of all ages.
We're talking about America's eating habits. If you'd like to join our discussion, it's 1-800-989-8255. And joining us now from his office in Williamsville, New York, is Mark Cotter. He's Senior Vice President at The Food Group. That's a marketing and advertising firm that consults with the food industry. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you, Lynn.
Now, you market fast food and processed food for a living. So how are some of these changes that we've been talking about in the industry, how's that going to change the way you market food?
Well, I think the way that they approach it moving forward is, although they've made efforts to change their menu offerings, so both on the restaurant side as well as the food manufacturing side, outside of product development, they're going to be look to marketing the idea behind the physical fitness or what would be the calorie burn aspect of what people do in their everyday lives. It's a double-edged sword promoting the idea behind healthier foods without promoting their core categories, which has been their lifeblood for so many years. So what you'll see is kind of a trending towards marketing towards physical fitness and healthier lifestyles.
So they're not going to change food, you're saying?
They are changing food as we speak, but they are not going to totally change their food because they can't go too far away from what is their core, because people have ideas in their mind before they go into a specific restaurant, what they want. And over time, they become habitual to those patterns. And, for instance, if you're going into a McDonald's, you're quite aware of what McDonald's has to offer. And you make a conscious decision before you go in on some of the things that you are looking for and or craving. So they can't go too far away from their core. It's going to be a blending of new menu items as well as marketing to healthier lifestyles.
And what about the local? Go ahead. Professor Popkin?
Nothing, I'm sorry.
Okay. What about the whole question of portions, both in items sold in the grocery store and in restaurants? I mean, we all know there are these restaurants that have just, you look at the portions and think, nobody can eat this, but I guess a lot of people take it home with them. But what about that whole issue?
I think there's two things. You had mentioned the supermarket or the grocery store, and I think when people buy things in a grocery store, they're buying package, and most of the time that's multiple portions. So they make a conscious decision when that product goes home or when they prepare it or consume it on the size of the portion that they eat. So that becomes a personal responsibility, I think. When it comes to the restaurants, however, that portion size is primarily driven by consumer demand and the restaurant wanting to add as much value to that specific meal occasion as possible.
We lost contact.
So, what happens is somebody walks into a restaurant and they see that they're paying X amount of dollars for an entree, they want to make sure that they're getting the most value for that entree, and whether it's eating that at one sitting, which is a conscious choice, or taking part of it home.
Now, to what extent, what is motivating the food industry to make any changes, to the extent that it is starting to make changes?
Well, first and foremost has been the negativity and the negative press around obesity. I'm not sure that there would be any changes if there weren't some of these legislations that made us more aware of it, or the statistics out there about how obese the U.S. is in comparison to other countries, and the amount of available foods that we have currently with high calorie, high fat, high sugar content in them. That is being marketed aggressively to both children, teens, tweens, and adults.
The number, if you'd like to join our discussion, 1-800-989-8255. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Max, and he's in San Francisco. Hi, Max.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have two things. First off, I would suggest a book by Marion Nestle called Food Politics. I think it touches on how the food industry, or at least most of the brands, it wouldn't behoove the consumer to walk into the grocery store with a grocery list, because a lot of it's impulse buying, and they certainly want that to happen. But second, I work for a natural foods company in San Francisco, and one of our main markets that we're trying to break into is the schools. And so one of our products is soup, and so we cut the carbos, we low in fat, low in salt, and no wheat, gluten, these sort of things. And we think it's the perfect product to get in the hands of the children. So we go to the trade shows and we talk to all the people, and it's just unbelievable to see what's available now for the schools and for the buyers to pick up. And that is, you know, deep fried sugar balls and these kind of things, and, you know, tons of soda with lots of sugar. And I just, you know, I sat across from somebody and told she was the buyer for all of Modesto. And I told her about our product, and she was really interested. But it was, you know, 20 cents more, 30 cents more than the, you know, the deep fried sugar balls. And I said, how many kids do you buy for? And she said 25,000. I sat back and I said, wouldn't it be amazing if I could get soup in front of all these 25,000 kids, and it tastes good, and it's good for them, it has all the vegetables, but instead it's, you know, 20 cents more, it's cheaper for them to just, you know, to just get the deep fried stuff, and it kills me. We wouldn't be making any money, you know. We'd make ends meet, but we'd certainly be making a difference. And I think it starts in schools, because then you can draw their taste away from this sort of stuff, and they feel better, and they exercise, and, you know, that's what we're going for. And I think that's where the change is going to happen with the school children's taste, because it's a lot of kids.
All right, thanks for your call, Max. And let me just ask you, Mark Carter, to comment on that, because there has been a lot of marketing to schools. I mean, we've heard lots of stories about the soda machines in schools. There are marketing campaigns. The fast food is aimed at school kids. What about the way these really high calorie, high portion products have been aimed at children?
Well, I think, you know, as it relates to the schools, you know, the decision making process in the schools is broken up many different ways, from the school district down into the managing organization that manages the food service within the school, and then there's the specific school itself and what programs it offers its kids. I mean, the school meal programs are designed around what we feel, based on the food pyramid, is, you know, acceptable amount of calorie intake based on the different food groups that fall within that, and unfortunately, there's sugars contained in there, there's fats contained in there. And the marketing aspects of that is really controlled by the school. You know, if the school makes a conscious choice not to offer those things within the school grounds, it will. But unfortunately, there's things that are affected by that, and one of them is profitability to the school, or what would be incremental income from having vending machines. And for the food service management company that's managing the food service, it's additional income for doing that, and it's also programs that they create with the manufacturer themselves to market in the schools, because they look for that added value to promote themselves within the school district and to make sure that the students are satisfied, because a lot of the judging of what makes a, you know, successful food service operation within schools is the customer satisfaction, which unfortunately comes down to the school, the kids making that decision.
Mark Carter, if you'll stay with us, we'll continue taking some calls after the break. We're talking about food, fat, and the future. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Today we're talking about healthier food and healthier eating with Professor Barry Popkin. He's with us from WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And we're also talking with Mark Carter. He's the Senior Vice President of the Food Group. Joining us now from Capitol Hill is Kentucky Republican Senator Mitch McConnell. Thanks for being with us, Senator McConnell.
Good afternoon.
You're proposing a bill that would protect the food industry from liability claims that their products make people fat or obese. Why are you proposing that bill?
Well, there's a particularly new and absurd trend in litigation, which portrays America as a society of victims being done in, if you will, by by someone else. And my legislation strictly deals with claims that someone else caused you to be obese or caused you to gain weight. It would not insulate food companies from any other kind of traditional litigation, but it would prevent litigation claiming that the seller, in effect, of food caused the purchaser to become obese or to gain weight.
Do you think the government should be involved at all in the fight against obesity? Is this purely a personal problem to be dealt with by the individual?
Oh, I do think that the government ought to certainly help educate the American public to its, you know, to the fact that we are apparently becoming more and more an overweight society, and the ways to deal with that, such as eating better and exercising and all of the things that that need to be done. But I think America becoming a society of victims who try to blame someone else for our own choices is clearly not the way to go.
Now, your state, Kentucky, is home to Yum Brands, which is the owners of Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, Long John Silver's. Is this an effort to protect that that business in your state?
No. I mean, you know, there are plenty of businesses that would benefit by this. I always think of the candy bar people, the Hershey people, would be an example of that. I think any seller of food would potentially be benefited, only to the extent that they would be insulated against lawsuits that no one prior to the last year or so would have ever thought about bringing in the first place. You know, until recently, it never occurred to anyone that it would be someone else's fault that I eat too much. And so this particularly absurd new trend in litigation needs to be stopped before it even starts.
Can you just describe the legislation for us and tell when you're going to introduce it?
It'll be introduced later this week, and it would essentially prohibit bringing any claim based on an alleged injury related to obesity or weight gain in a state or federal court against any lawful food manufacturer. So as you can see, it is limited to claims related to obesity or weight gain. It would not in any way insulate manufacturers or sellers from other kinds of traditional claims, such as selling food in violation of federal or state laws, or breaching a contract, or selling adulterated food. I mean, all of those kinds of claims would still be available. The only thing that would not be possible would be for a plaintiff in one of these cases to claim that the seller of food caused their obesity or weight gain problem.
Do you have any sense at this point of how much support this would have in the Senate?
I don't know yet, having not introduced the bill yet, but I think that the American people are likely to agree overwhelmingly that while this is a very, very significant problem in America, it is not the fault of the sellers of the food, but rather the consumers of the food.
Senator, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Senator Mitch McConnell is a Republican from Kentucky, and he joined us from Capitol Hill. Professor Barry Popkin is still with us, as is Mark Cotter. Let me ask you, first of all, Professor Popkin, what do you think about this proposed legislation?
Well, it's a complex reaction that I have. On the one hand, 50 years ago, the tobacco industry was saying the same thing, and they didn't want legislation. And you can see how important tobacco legislation was in controlling smoking in the world. Secondly, right now, the U.S. government spends a few million dollars for nutrition education, and the food industry spends tens of millions of dollars to promote their product. In the schools, they give money to schools to encourage them to not only sell soft drinks, but sell more and to limit what's sold. So we've got an unfair playing deck, and it might very well be that the legislation, while it may be almost impossible to show causality and really to do anything major in the short term, may really be an important element for pushing the food industry to address these issues seriously and for getting them to work with Congress to have the government do more to make a level playing field by changing the rules of the game for all the food sectors. So, for example, saying nobody can advertise or promote in the schools so that it's not pitting Coke against Pepsi and everybody's going to equally be affected. Or by saying, let's have no advertisements on TV on Saturday morning related to food going to children.
Mark Cotter, if legislation like this did pass, what effect would it have on this movement within the food industry towards responding to a desire for healthier food?
Well, I think it totally supports the food industry, which you know is a very large portion of the, you know, the nation's economy between manufacturing and the restaurant industry. So I can understand the level of importance, but I would think it we would need some sort of education initiative put forward in response to that to that bill that would ensure the further education of physical fitness and health and healthier eating choices. I think that although the legislation protects certain parts of the food industry, it doesn't address the key issues where the messages are being sent. And, you know, just like the professor had said, what do we do when it relates to where the brand adoption starts with the youth and whether it's TV or schools? And you know, I think it becomes a responsibility of individuals as well as parents, as well as marketers, as well as food manufacturers and the messages that they do send and they do portray over the different mediums that are available or that they expose their brands to.
May I make one point?
Mm-hmm.
When you think about cigarettes advertisements and the kinds of concerns that Americans had for promoting them and advertisements that promoted kids by showing cigarettes being sexier to smoke and so forth, and we've really legislated those. We've said that's really unfair promotion. That will get people to do a behavior that we don't want them to follow. And yet we haven't done anything like that in the food area. So Mark Cotter is correct about the issues of knowledge and advertisement, but it's such an unequal equation right now when you've got tens of billions going to advertisements for food and you've got literally a few million going for nutrition education for all of America.
Okay, Mr. Cotter, a couple of questions for you just to close out. As a marketer, what products do you see on the horizon, first of all? And then also, what is the bottom line? Can the industry still make money and help consumers to eat healthier?
Well, two things. There are a lot of products that are out there now that directly address the needs for healthier foods out there. You have companies like Cadbury, you know, coming out with products which are spin-offs of their original product, but yet they're trying to make them healthier, like their Healthy Harvest applesauce product, which is directly promoted to kids. And also, they've also taken Hawaiian Punch, for instance, and made it a Hawaiian Punch Light, removing 60% of the sugar. And there's a lot of products you see out there now using products made from sucralose, you know, the Splenda product. There's over 1,000 of them out there now that are now available. And there are a whole line of functional foods that are positioned as healthier, and they are healthier, made from all-natural products that have healthier fats in them and less sugars. You know, and then on top of that, you have other, you know, restaurants, as you see out there, offering menu items and choices. And we're early out of the gate to find out if they will trend towards the majority of how we consume products. And the biggest problem we have right now is being able to produce those at a cost that then the supermarkets can sell at a fair rate, as well as health food stores and restaurants, because it's all about the cost of the ingredients. And usually, you're either processing something to a degree to make it healthier, or you're removing something from natural products to make them healthier. And there's a cost associated with that. And right now, what we're seeing is there is a portion of the population that's willing to buy it and willing to spend the money, and there are those that just refuse to do it and go back to what are their habits, eating large portions at cheaper prices.
Okay. Well, thanks to both of you for being with us. Mark Cotter is the Senior Vice President at The Food Group, and Barry Popkin is an economist and professor of nutrition in the School of Public Health at UNC Chapel Hill. We spoke with him from the station there at WUNC. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.